They formed circles hand in hand and, appearing to have lost all control over their senses, continued dancing, regardless of the bystanders, for hours together, in wild delirium, until at length they fell to the ground in a state of exhaustion. They then complained of extreme oppression and groaned as if in the agonies of death, until they were swathed in the clothes bound tightly round their waists, upon which they again recovered and remained free from complaint until the next attack. Now, what I'm describing there is a scene from my last comedy gig 2 weeks ago. What I'm describing there is the dancing plague that overtook Strasbourg in 1518. And that is going to be the topic for today's Third Foot.
It's one of our favourites, dancing plagues. They come up now and again on the show.
Yeah, they do. So, sorry. Hello, by the way, if you've never listened to this show before.
I like that we did a sort of like quote to start the show. It felt almost like we were doing a podcast then.
Yeah. if you've never listened to our podcast before, I'm Ben, and that's Barry over there with the Irish accent.
Yeah.
And this is one of our special episodes where we take a suggestion from a previous show and find out a little bit more about it. About a year and a half ago, we spoke to Twitter historian and slayer of far-right trolls, Mike Stuchberry, and talked about the world's worst epidemics. And one of the things that came up was this notion of dancing plagues or dancing mania, which sort of occurred intermittently in northwestern Europe, all along the banks of the Rhine, in the Holy Roman Empire, the Netherlands, bits of northern France, really from the 11th century to the 16th century.
And you messaged me today saying, I've chosen this because it seems vaguely topical because of the coronavirus at the moment, which worries me that perhaps you think that bird flu was the chicken dance that got out of hand.
I mean, that would be fitting with the marks I got for GCSE biology.
Yeah.
Obviously, the thing with coronavirus is that I think the reason people are dying is because they haven't had the Lyme virus first.
I think that's true. Lyme disease.
Yeah, Lyme disease. Of course. We talked in the episode all about the madness of crowds and how there doesn't really seem to be any physical reason why this happened. And what happened, broadly speaking, is groups of people, 50, 100, 200, 400, would start dancing a mad jig non-stop for hours and hours and end in this weird fugue state.
Yeah.
Often they would dance to holy shrines.
Saint Vitus, isn't he the guy who was the saint associated with it a lot?
Yeah, there was...
I think he's a patron saint of dancing or something like that.
There was two. It was either Saint Vitus or Saint John, and Saint Vitus was one of the shrines that they danced to. I don't know if he's a patron saint of dancing. One theory, and it's sort of, I think we talked about it on the show, that it connects to what happened in Salem in the 17th century, is the ergotism theory, which is that a particular fungus grew in the grain, and that is a fungus that contains hallucinogenic properties, and it popped into the air and made people go a bit loopy. And, you know, a lot of this dancing, they saw visions as well. Of Paul Bettany dressed like an android. But the ergotism theory doesn't actually work because all of these dancing manias broke out along the Rhine and Moselle rivers, and while they're linked by water, they have very different climates and crops. So it doesn't really work. And also, some people have gone, well, maybe syphilis is the sort of thing that can make you go a bit loopy as well, but I think we'd spotted if 400 people all had syphilis at the same time.
Were all of these plagues in brothels?
Yeah. Yeah, that wasn't dancing they were doing.
Yeah,
That was just a misplaced butt plug. You know, it's the equivalent of as a parent when you accidentally stand on a bit of Lego.
Yeah.
If you're in a brothel and you're like sitting down, you can't sit down for upturned butt plugs.
Do you think that actually, what had happened, there'd been an epidemic of Lego in Strasbourg in 1518 and just people kept stepping on it?
Yeah, but that's also where opera was invented.
Yeah.
One thing that historians are quite convinced of is that some of the outbreaks were now what is known as Sydenham's chorea, which is a disorder which is characterised by rapid jerking movements of the face, hands and feet. So something we might associate with Tourette's syndrome, but it is not that. The term St. Vitus's dance that you referred to was coined by Paracelsus, who was a quite famous medic of the day. What is oddest about this, other than people having a good old dance together, is the way in which the authorities, particularly in Strasbourg in 1518, which is where the largest outbreak of it was, tried to treat it. And they try to get people to keep dancing and to basically...
To dance it off? Like, walk it off?
Pretty much. And in fact, what they did is the authorities set down a law that people should dance day and night. They constructed a special stage in the heart of the city where they shepherded the dancers so they could sort of dance in the middle of the city away from everyone else. You're looking sceptical.
I feel like the Musicians' Union was behind all of this.
Yeah, you've got to dance on mandated ground and nowhere else. They even hired professional dancers and musicians to keep these people in constant motion.
Wow.
But...
Yeah, no, someone who owns a concert hall is just making a quick bucket.
Yeah, obviously, what happened is that just turned it into a bigger epidemic.
Yeah, it's, of course, yeah.
Even by the standards of sort of like early modern medicine, it's a bloody terrible idea.
Well, you've got flu, what you need to do is we need to gather you all together and you all have to keep coughing.
Yeah, well, it's clearly what they want is like, they don't just need leeches, they need gyrating leeches. the Gyrating Leeches, of course, a cracking garage group from the early 60s. I read a bit more about it from an author called Robert Bartholomew. He said there was all sorts of strange little added elements to it. So the dancers would often travel as they danced and would pick people up as they go, Pied Piper style. Ah. And some of them would travel 10, 20 miles.
This is obviously where the conga developed.
Yes, yeah. The conga is a very contagious dance.
Yeah.
But he said that he described how dancers would wear strange, colourful attire and held wooden sticks. So it's not just the conga, it's Morris dancing that broke out collectively here. He also notes that it would lead to extreme exhibitionist behaviour. So it's odd. In one respect, people were going on these mad pilgrimages to shrines, but on others, they parade around naked, make obscene gestures, or even have sexual intercourse. Others behaved like animals and would sort of like leap about on one leg. So it sounds
like the 60s.
Also like football hooligans who've dropped one too many tabs of acid. The dancers had a particular aversion to things. So some of them couldn't stand pointed shoes.
Right.
Others couldn't stand the colour red. Others really liked their heat being fit. Others really liked their feet being hit. And then, obviously, unsurprisingly, at the other end of it, there would be ailments just of exhaustion. So people would suffer chest pains, broken shoulders, broken ribs, hyperventilation, epilepsy, and often people would drop down dead. It was thought in Strasbourg 15 people died from it.
And there was, like, several hundred people danced at Strasbourg, wasn't it? Like 400 or 500?
Four or 500, yeah. And as well as dancers to sort of dance along with them to keep it going, the Council of Strasbourg even employed strong men to basically clutch the bodies of the dancers and keep their legs going. So these people who will sort of look like river dance.
Yeah. They're inventing so many different styles.
I know. This is the year zero for dance. It's incredible. There was also sort of connected to it in Italy, and I don't know whether it was an inspiration for it, this idea of tarantism, which was this notion that victims who had been poisoned by a tarantula or a scorpion... Can't be poisoned by a tarantula, but the certain music would cause you to dance when connected to this. So there were two theories. One was that if you were bitten by it, if you heard certain music, you would dance because it would sort of activate the poison in you. But the other way around is you would dance the tarantella to get rid of the poison and dance the poison out of you.
So that's where the tarantella comes from.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Nice.
The biggest theory for where it's come from is twofold. One is this notion of shared stress. Like the early 16th century was an incredibly tumultuous, stressful time. Obviously, 1518 is just before the Reformation hits, but there was a time of great social upheaval. There were outbreaks of all sorts of diseases. There were famines. There were strange weather events. There were lights in the sky and comets. And there was this idea of mad religious fever, like our old friends, the Anabaptists.
Yes.
Or in a similar area, the old Give Me a Throne and the 100 Virgins Brigade. Also, because cities were so small and compact, these mad ideas could be hothoused. So everyone did believe in the devil, and everyone did believe in this part of the world, water spirits that would make you dance and make you go mad with ecstatic dancing. And clearly just this idea was so reinforced all in the community that it made it happen. And it's the same that happens when you look at sort of like Pentecostalist churches, you do speaking in tongues, or voodoo communities where I can use the word shaman, and I don't know if I'm using it in the appropriate context, but they take on the character of various deities, and it's like, well, if you have the lore and the myth to back you up, then people doing it will really invest in it.
There's also something very socially subversive in a very like strict buttoned up society. I imagine if you see a few religious fanatics having a moment and dancing and going a bit mad, you might just go, if you're a bit downtrodden, go, oh, fuck it, I'm just going to join in and have a laugh for a bit.
Yeah, well, that's why there were so many buttoned-up grannies who would turn up at raves in the late 80s. Just there, just going, I could join the Tory party, but, you know, what's your name, where you're from, what you want? My name's Glynis, I'm from Colwyn Bay, and I've had 7 tabs of MDMA. I'm doing into a little poem.
Yeah, I crushed it into my comp plan.
The other thing that I looked up was dance marathons, which was a big trend in Depression-era America. So this is, people would dance for 12, 18, 24 hours.
Without it being for children in need?
No, as a way of earning money for themselves after earning prizes. They were known as sort of like endurance contests to earn a quick buck. Well, not a quick buck, a long drawn out buck.
So you'd have lots of competitors, just and you have to keep dancing in the last one standing.
Last one standing, yeah.
Wow.
And it was inspired by a woman called Alma Cummings, who in 1923 danced continuously for 27 hours with 6 different partners. And after she established her record, she was the pioneer. Dance marathons became common throughout the US. And initially they competed to break her record, but later on they competed to win prizes ranging from money to publicity to cars to home appliances.
And then when the dancers got tired and started leaning on the car, they then invented the touch the truck endurance competition.
Yep. And it's, what's incredible is when the Depression really hit, they became a focal point for spectators to have food, get shelter and win prizes. I'd like to think, but I don't know, betting on who's going to drop last. But it was, when people had nothing, they would go to the dance marathons.
Was it a specific style of dance as well? I presume they'd probably have music playing and you just have to... Yeah. And then the musicians presumably were taking part in their own play an instrument marathon.
Yeah.
The conductor's in his own marathon. Yeah, they combine lots of these
There's
competitions.
There's just a guy doing laps outside the building as well, desperately trying to deliver a message about a battle going on. There were some opponents, brilliantly... movie theatre owners campaigned against it, because like, guys, you're not going to the cinema anymore. You're going to this instead. And obviously church groups said that it was very sinful to have people dancing like this.
Church groups, yada yada yada, etc, etc. Decline and fall of civilization. Thin end of the wedge.
I'm really...
This is what happens when you raise 2 people in like a quite a strict religious upbringing. Completely the wrong outcome of whatever experiment we were.
Yeah, or alternatively the correct outcome.
Yes.
Looking at it from another point of view. As far as I've seen, 1 fatality in 1927, and I'm called Homer Morehouse. It was the first contestant to dance in the marathon, but after dancing for 87 hours, he collapsed from exhaustion, died on the dance floor, and inspired Sophie Ellis-Bextor. So, and one last little thing that I found. In Japan, in the mid-1860s, there was a bunch of social and political protests called Ijanaika, which was sort of a carnivalesque celebration, communal activity and protest, and was part of a period called the Meiji Restoration. And it was essentially public dancing festivals connected to rain magic and dances for the dead, and sacred amulets were said to have fallen from heaven, and Thanksgiving celebrations for these were lasted several days, and there would be like mad public mass dancing, which would include cross-dressing, elaborate costumes, and there was also gratitude given to either local spirits or Buddhas. And the term Ijanaika was a refrain in popular songs. And the phrase has got a variety of defiant and fatalistic meanings, including, who cares? Why not? what the hell, or even, who cares if we take all our clothes off?
Okay, I like the what the hell to, as a reaction to amulets falling from the sky. Yeah. That seems appropriate.
But thinking about how buttoned up Japanese society is, yeah. I like the fact of a bunch of Japanese people as a protest, basically going, let's fuck.
Yeah.
But in a very stoic, shit happens kind of way.
And if it's dancing, quite a rhythmic way. Yes. Kind of things.
Yeah, and obviously they were inspiration for Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. One final story. If I remember when I was in Israel as a 16-year-old on Israel tour, like a lot of Jewish kids do, I for a bet with my mate Sam and Asher, I managed to lead a conga line of all of the 44 people on my tour group down Ben Gurion Street in Tel Aviv from one pizza hut to another, and just watching all these Israelis going, what are they doing? And obviously they were going, a conga line, that looks a bit like a snake, that is verboten in our religion.
We hope you enjoyed this month's Third Foot. Thank you to all of those who donate to us on patreon.com, which helps us to have the, which helps fund the podcast and which helps us do these extra bonus episodes. If you want to support us, visit patreon.com/worstfootforward and find out the different rewards you can get there for donating various amounts of money. Also, please, 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 if you haven't yet and you're in and about London, buy a ticket to come and see us do Worst Foot Forward live. Our first live recording is taking place on the 29th of February at 4:30 p.m. at the Vault Festival in Waterloo in London. We are hosting the World's Worst Dinner Party with guests, former guests of the podcast, coming back to join us for the World's Worst Dinner Party. We hope you can join us as well. Visit vaultfestival.com for tickets.
And whilst you're on that website, Barry has got a play on from February the 11th to February the 16th. It's called The First. It is an Aaron Sorkin-esque, fast-talking, high-trousers, two-hander, all about the first ever mission to Mars and people writing speeches, depending on whether it goes well or not so well.
Spoiler alert, it might or might not go well. And if you are in London around the 18th and 19th of February, you can come and see Ben van der Velde, Fablemaker, also at the Vault Festival in Waterloo. That is at 6:30 p.m. on the 18th and 19th of February. That's Ben's completely made up storytelling stand-up show where he creates stories out of his own brain using the people in the room to inspire him.
Mm-hmm.
A hat trick of shows from Worst Foot Forward Enterprises, and we hope your January closes well, and good luck in February. It's a short month, guys, got a lot to pack in. Thanks for listening. Bye.